Wherever cancer is, Hancock Health will fight. In any part of you and in all corners of East Central Indiana. From Indianapolis to Greenfield, to Knightstown to Greensburg. From hospital rooms to family rooms, we fight. With technology and medicine. With care backed by the wisdom of Mayo Clinic. For you, for your family, and for your future in Decatur County. We fight cancer here. HancockHealth.org/cancer.
It is the Kendall and Casey Show. Good morning. Happy Wednesday. I'm Rob. Casey's out today. Our old pal, Brad Kloffensteinstein, in for Casey. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Rob.
And look who has joined us in the WIBC studios. Breaking news from the WIBC Traffic Department, the great Matt Bear. Hello.
Good morning, everybody.
All right, so we had intended to start off the show today with that underwhelming and completely ridiculous governor's debate. We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, there was some breaking news this morning, a gigantic bus fire at 38th and Meridian. Matt, what do we know, first of all, about how it's kind of disrupted the flow of traffic in the city?
The whole thing, I'm avoiding Meridian Street going north from 36th to 38th. That's still shut down right now for the bus fire cleanup. They've shut down the 38th and Meridian bus station right now. The whole area is going to be a mess for some time here this morning. And we don't know when cleanup's going to be finished, but right now, northbound Meridian is still closed. People are pushing the Penn. They're pushing to other side streets, and that's just why it's not a very healthy area. And this is a big-time intersection in the middle of it. It's right there in the heart of Indianapolis, so it's a tough one to lose, but it's definitely a place that I'm not going through after I leave here today.
So, Matt, what happened here? I've heard various rumors, so I'm going to you to find out what is actually happening. Was this a gas or an electric bus? And B, I heard rumors that they've sent the arson investigators.
Yeah, that has been confirmed. Arson investigators have been sent to the scene. Here's what it was. About 7:30 this morning at WIBC Traffic had the tweet out talking about the bus fire. And this is
video's incredible.
Yeah, the video is massive. I mean, this bus was fully engulfed. And this is because of the awesome listening audience that we have and the very keen traffic tipsters that we have at WIBC Traffic. I cannot remember the gentleman's name, but we get so many tips. And we are so blessed to have those. But yes, about 7:30 this morning, this bus fire was reported at WIBC Traffic. The picture was put out, and we were asking people to avoid the area. Now, this is a red line bus station at 38th and Meridian, and that station is closed. And by my visual, looking at all the different pictures, this is a red line bus that caught fire. Now, as the morning progressed, our friends at Wish TV did report that an arson investigator has been called to the scene, and that I've seen other news outlets here today report that, yes, one of the witnesses said the bus was set on fire by one of the passengers.
So, now, we don't know anything right now, though, whether anybody was on the bus. We don't know if there's any victims.
We do know that the driver was able to get everybody off the bus. I have heard a couple of people were taken to the hospital, but Indigo did release that earlier this morning saying that the bus was safely evacuated, and that's the most important thing. Nobody was seriously hurt in this crash.
So, how long do you think this intersection is going to be closed? I mean, obviously, if they're investigating for arson, I mean, this could be an all-day thing.
Well, I apologize. I just called it a crash. It was not that. We had two car fires today. We had a bus fire and a car fire and then another car fire. It was just one of those mornings, so I'm getting it all confused in my head. Except, yeah, as far as the closure of northbound Meridian Street, it's going to take a minute to clean this up, and then you have to look at the bus station, I'm sure, and see if any damage has been done to that and if repair need to be made. So I'm saying at least avoid the area for the rest of the morning just to be safe. And again, that's Meridian at 38th Street. I was getting tips that Penn was just absolutely trashed about an hour ago. And again, these tips that come into WIBC Traffic are just remarkably good, and we're so blessed to have
them. He's got an army of people. Like, it's amazing. I have my wife, but then I don't really even have a person. He's got an army of people that are just, and this is, by the way, Matt Bear joining us, starting the show today. There was a massive bus fire at the intersection of 38th and Meridian. Obviously, it has caused all sorts of traffic ramifications that'll probably, I assume, continue throughout the rest of the day. But I kind of wanted you to talk about this, about how much this has changed, where you now don't depend on some guy on the other end of a string giving you the information. You now can get this information in real time and relay it to people. That video, again, is just absolutely incredible. And it is a amazing that no one was injured.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I saw the bus fire and I was like, ugh. And that's the first thing that comes to mind. You know, I mean, as traffic, as the profession goes, you know, you have to get to closure. You have to get to traffic. But the whole time I'm thinking, God, I hope nobody was on that bus. Yeah, and that's really what you're thinking. Same thing whenever a school bus crash comes in.
Right.
It's the first thing that goes to your mind. I hope there were no kids on the bus. And thankfully, we haven't had anything serious happen like that in a long time. But as far as occupants getting hurt on a bus. But yeah, the bus was occupied, but the driver, thinking quickly, was able to get everybody out. And it sounds like for safe for the most part. And that's what we're happy about. But yeah, the information flows. I mean, the tips are great. And I never thank the dispatchers. The dispatchers of Metro at NDOT every everywhere else just kick ass. They're great people and they're always so quick to help and they're cool about it too. So yeah, we have lots of people out there working hard at this and it's a really great community to be a part of.
All right, so you'll keep everybody up to date all throughout the day. Obviously, again, big time traffic ramifications, the investigation ongoing. If people want to follow you, stay up to date on this all throughout the day, how can they do that?
It's at WIBC Traffic and my personal account is at Matt in Traffic. Either one will get you there.
Hey, before we let you go, we do this every single time. Just take a minute, tell us about this podcast you have. It is an incredible podcast that's out, and it is helping so many people who are trying to kick addiction, who are struggling with addiction, loved ones who have people with addiction. I love the Supporting Sobriety podcast. Just take a few seconds and tell us about it.
Bless you, Rob. Thanks, man. It is at Supporting Sobriety, at Sobriety _ pod, the Supporting Sobriety podcast. And you said it, man. I mean, we're talking to the people who brought us out of the darkness, man, brought us out of the abyss. I'm a recovering alcoholic, Ryan, and a recovering addict. And really, there's no difference, you know, between the two. But we talk to the people, the caregivers that helped us out, and we try to explain some of these concepts of recovery that might be a little bit foreign to everybody. And we totally speak from our own experiences. When we don't know, we bring in guests, we bring in experts, and we'll tell you we don't know. This is from our experience, and that's why it's so much fun to be able to do and to be able to talk about it because, one, it helps keep me sober.
Yeah.
and that's paramount to me. That is first and foremost. And two, it might help out somebody else. So to be able to do it is awesome. Thanks for letting me say something.
They had Terry Stacey on a recent, maybe two episodes ago now, about her struggle with her husband. And it was Brad. I mean, it was incredible.
I'm going to have to go back and listen
to
that.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
She was amazing.
Yeah, it was great. Supporting Sobriety, name of the podcast. All day long, follow Matt. They can follow your personal account and the WIBC account. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. We'd love to have you in the community.
All right, Matt Bear, thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks, guys.
Awesome.
Take care.
All right, from a bus fire to something that was probably even bigger than a bus fire, that governor's debate last night. The moderator was a train wreck. The whole thing was a disaster. Everybody associated with this should be totally ashamed. Brad, we'll take a break. We'll tell everybody what happened when we come back.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to it.
Kendall and Casey Show, 93 WIBC.
I've got to follow that dream wherever that dream may lead.
Well, I had a dream last night, Brad, and it didn't come true. That we'd have a normal professional governor's debate.
Did you not sleep well either?
That was a complete train wreck and a dumpster fire. And in a weird way, it's almost what most of those candidates deserved. It is Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob. Casey's out today. Brad Kloffenstein in for Casey. So that moderator last night, John
Swanis.
Swanis is his name. He should be totally embarrassed and he should be totally ashamed of himself. The debate commission should be totally embarrassed and ashamed of themselves for putting that guy up there, because that was, I mean, there were moments during that governor's debate last night, Brad, where I thought surely Ashton Kutcher is going to pop up from behind a podium and start laughing, or they're going to cut away and you're going to find the Impractical Jokers guys in his ear. That was the most unprofessional thing I have ever seen, certainly in a debate format. And I have no idea what that guy was trying to do. He totally went into business for himself. He was fighting with candidates. He was literally giving Mike Braun talking points.
That was odd.
That was a total dumpster fire last night.
Now, I've got 8 pages of copious notes.
Show those to the people on the YouTube feed so they can see that Brad does indeed have notes.
I've got 8 pages of notes here. So I'm going to defend John Swanis just for a little bit his body of work. So John Swanis has been following Indiana politics for at least 25 years, maybe longer. He was a reporter for The Star. I believe he was at some other paper before that. He was on Indiana Week in Review. He still does Indiana Lawmakers. I mean, he has been doing this even longer than Nikki Kelly.
So, you could have put a high school student up there last night. Brad would have done better than that guy.
I think the problem was all it took was one candidate to start attacking the moderator, and then it was like blood in the water, and all five of them started doing it. But on the other hand, he lost control early, and then it never regained it.
Well, and so we talked about this before the show. Flow is a big part of any media production. And let's face it, debates are media productions on television. It's on television all over the state. Our radio show is the same way. You get in a flow on this show, and the show kind of goes how the flow works. We do different topics. We weave those topics in and out based on, you know, sometimes we do sports, we do politics, and the show kind of goes based on the flow. It's my job today to orchestrate the flow of the show since Casey's not here.
Right, exactly. You have to work harder because I'm sitting
here. That's right. Yes, I have to do some actual work. But in this case, he failed in every way possible. I mean, debates are not hard, especially when you got five people up there. Here's the format, and you have a list of questions, and you just follow the format. You're basically conducting a train. You're making sure the train is running on time. Hey, you have X amount of time. After you ask the question, you make sure the people stay on time. You keep people, you're calling balls and strikes, basically. You're kind of an umpire out there. He was playing the game. He was pitching. He was catching. He was swinging a bat. It was ridiculous.
Now, I'm curious, did he just do this format himself? I mean, he's been doing this long enough. The debate commission could have just said, John, we're going to let you run with it. Or was there a team of people that kind of put this format together? The only other time I can recall them in a debate format where they said, raise your hand, was early in 2016 in the Republican presidential debate when there's like 18 of them on stage. And they said, who here will vow to not run as an independent if you don't get the nominee or if you're not the nominee? And Trump was the only one to raise his hand on that one. That's the only other time I've seen the raise your hand type question.
And the questions he was asking, I mean, there was so, like, I was trying to figure out what audio would I even pull. And it was so ridiculous that I thought, I don't want to give one more credit than the other. But there's this exchange where he goes into, do you believe the 2020 presidential election was stolen? And it's like, what the hell does that have to do with someone running the state of Indiana? Now, if the question's about Indiana's election integrity, do you have any concerns? Okay. But he's clearly at this point asking questions that have nothing to do. He's asking them for his own amusement or whatever, and then starts fighting with Curtis Hill and Jamie Rittenauer based on their answers, and he's giving these smart-ass responses. That guy, I mean, the debate commission should be ashamed of itself for however that happened, that you allowed that guy, who totally went into business for himself for an hour and a half. Not that you have a bunch of dynamos up there anyway, but I got nothing out of the debate last night, and I think the overwhelming majority of the audience didn't, and he was so bad, Brad. John Swanes was so bad that this was the one moment in time where the conservatives hated him, the establishment hated him, the candidates all hated him, even the media, like the mainstream traditional journalists who almost always universally look out for and defend each other, were like, yeah, pretty bad last night.
Well, he had one question that was a double negative question, which was really awkward. He's like, so it started off with a premise that's a negative, and then said somebody voted against it. Do you agree with the person that voted against it? And it's like, I don't know what you're asking. This seems like higher math.
It seemed like on multiple. And by the way, I would say Curtis Hill was the winner. I went in Rittenauer on a protest vote because they kicked her off the debate stage. However, Curtis ripped that guy's ass so well last night that I'm inclined to maybe vote for Curtis, because we talked about this offline. Curtis Hill's a phenomenal debater. He's light years ahead of everybody else in that state.
He says, when he's in this situation, he's smooth. He says all the right things. I want to like him. However, he is wholly unelectable and has, I think, eliminated himself from consideration just based on his personal behavior.
Yeah, and I've struggled with this throughout the entire election process, because Curtis, like he's so much better than everybody else up there. But you're right. There's a certain unrelatability about Curtis, and that's the challenge. First of all, he didn't raise any money, which that's ridiculous. You're a former attorney general, and he raised $7.
Well, disgraced former attorney general.
Well, right. And we talked about, and it's another conversation for another time, about whether you feel bad for Curtis or not. Because on one hand, he's been, you know, no criminal charges, no ethics violations. It looks like this civil suit is about to be settled with no real ramifications. Who knows if that's actually how it's going to play out. But, you know, he did get a slap on the wrist from the Supreme Court. But it's like, okay, so on one hand, you feel bad for the guy that he got destroyed. But on the other hand, you put yourself in that position, and you probably should have been smarter than that.
Right. Well, my friends in Elkhart County who knew him when he was a four-term prosecutor, and even the people down here, pretty much to a person, they will say Curtis Hill is Curtis Hill's biggest fan.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It does not serve him well in situations where you maybe need to be a little humble.
So we'll get into this a little bit more later on throughout the course of the program today. But look, I know people are saying, and they're mainstream Republicans who are saying this should be the end of the debate commission. This was, the thing was that bad last night. Here would be my general question, though. You're the Republican Party. Why are you allowing PBS public broadcasting? And by the way, this is the exact reason. What you saw last night is the exact reason people want all government money out of PBS, because that dude totally went into his business for himself, clearly had an agenda, and railroaded the entire process. And that was the worst possible display for public broadcasting last night, to have that guy front and center. They gave ammunition to everything people have been saying about why government money should not be involved in broadcasting. But the question out of it was, I guess my takeaway from it was, nothing got accomplished if you're a challenger to Mike Braun last night. Mike Braun is the clear winner for not showing up. And the fact that Swanes was reading Braun, literally reading Mike Braun talking points at one point, great move by Braun, giving the middle finger to transparency and not showing up.
That was odd. All I can figure, I have a feeling that, all of these candidates, there's not much difference between them. And I think that they were trying to showcase what differences there might be out there. It was just weird how they did it, and I don't think they accomplished that goal, because instead of answering the question, all they did was attack the moderator. So you never really got a true answer out of it. Now, I do think it was funny. Chambers, who touts himself as the big outsider, was the one who towards the end basically said, listen, I ran the IEDC. I'm the one who did this. He was the one who was most statesman, saying, this is how it works. I'm the only one here who knows how it works. I appreciated that from him.
Well, all right. So we'll get into this more throughout the day today. Let's take a break. When we come back, a big ruling has come down from the FTC that will likely impact a huge amount of the American workforce. And it's could be good for people in our business. So we'll talk about that coming up next. Kendall and Casey Show, 93 WIB.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
See. The Kendall and Casey Show, as the man said. I'm Rob. Casey's out today. Brad Kloppenstein's not in for Casey. And a huge ruling, Brad, coming down from the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, that is likely to impact a large amount of workers in this country, potentially 30 million people.
But unfortunately, Rob, this does not affect you, because it says anybody who makes more than $151,164 is exempt from this. And I'm sure that you fall into that category.
Oh, Brad, you and your drugs. You're a funny man. So the FTC has come, the Federal Trade Commission, in a 3-2 ruling, has essentially struck down non-compete agreements for people who, as you said, Brad, make less than $151,164. But also that number only applies, according to CNBC, senior executives who are in policymaking roles.
Right.
So even if by the grace of God, somehow in radio, there's someone making more than $151,000, unless they're making the calls, They're exempt too. 30 million people, they believe, are going to be impacted by this, or roughly 18% of the American workforce. This is a huge ruling, Brad.
It is. I've been covered by non-competes at various times in my career, and I always thought it was a little odd. It's like, wait a second. I just started here as a lowly sales rep, bottom rung.
Yeah.
Why are you slapping a one-year non-compete on me if I ever wanted to leave?
And there's two sides to this, and I see both sides, having been both a business owner and an employee. And I spent the first, 10, 12 years of my adult existence as a business owner. That's how I earned my living. I owned a streaming company. I owned a radio station. I mean, I understand where both sides are coming from on this. And I go back and forth because, like, in our industry, the non-competes are common.
Right.
But it's different in our industry because there's nowhere to go. Right. I mean, like, there's nowhere to go other than here. And then the non-compete makes it doubly assured there's nowhere for you to go. So you don't have a lot of leverage in the sense of, because of the way the radio industry is structured, you don't have the ability to go, I ain't signing that.
Well, in the radio business, you are the product.
Right.
I'm not the product. You are the product.
Well, though, you're the product today, Brad.
This station would go on just fine if I wasn't here forever again. So,
well, here's the thing, the little secret, Brad. WIBC's been around for 80 plus years. It'll go on fine when none of us are here.
That's a good point. So I can kind of see it when it comes to talent. But yeah, just for a salesperson or an administrative person, all you're doing is handicapping them for no good reason. It's, you know, it's not like they're gonna take a bunch of business with them. It just happens.
And so this is sort of the battle that's been raging, and you and I, neither one of us, I think it's safe to say, our government must do something guy. But if you're in an industry, and this is true for many, many industries, we're not just talking about radio, obviously, when there's 30 million people that are going to be impacted by something, where your employer sort of has you over a barrel, because if you want to be in this, there's nowhere else for you to go. You have to play by our rules or not play at all. I don't know how free market really that is. Like, in our business, the government controls the radio industry.
It's effectively indentured servitude.
It is, right? I mean, the government, our business is limited in terms of, you can't go out and start a radio station, or you can't go out and start a television station, because they're licensed by the government.
Right.
And as a result of that, so now you have the government creating barriers to access. Yet then there's barriers to employment based on the barriers to access, based on the licenses of the government. Now, what'll be interesting with this is there have been a host of organizations come out and say, we are suing. We're going to challenge this in court. I don't think it's going to take effect. I think it's highly unlikely. It's supposed to take 120 days after this ruling gets officially published. But I think this is going to be held up in court for quite a while.
Yeah, there's going to be stays on this. And I guess I tend to agree with the ruling just for the reasons that we've talked about. I mean, most people have about a 40 to 45 year earnings window.
Right.
So, you know, if you take a year out of that, that's 2 to 2.5% of your earning opportunity that you'd maybe have to sit out if you had to wait out a non-compete.
You do. I mean, and look, again, there's all sorts of industries where it is standard you have to do it if you want to be in it. And that's a hard thing. Now, look, they give me the boot here, I get compensated. Okay, so that's the trade-off, right?
You've got a contract.
You get compensated. And I'm not in any way trying to pick on our employer, because it's standard in our industry. Any place you work, from the time I was 20 years old, I was signing non-competes in the radio industry. But it's, should it be, should, how much control should your employer have over your ability to earn a living if they don't want you to work there anymore? Because this is the thing with many of these non-competes. In many industries, they can get rid of you. Your non-compete remains in enforcement even after they've said, we no longer want you to work here. And for people who aren't, you know, if you're making $5 million, you're getting something for what you're giving. But if you're some middle-class person, That's a bit of a stinger.
Now, I thought it was weird. When I was on the sales side of the radio business, mind you, I had no experience in radio sales. I came from the beer business before I went into radio sales, and they had me sign a non-compete. And yeah, it was odd. I'm like, what? I'm going to take the clients I don't already have and take them somewhere else. And when I left, we it was a mutually agreed upon parting of the ways. And you're like, yeah, we don't think you're going to stay in the radio business anyhow. We're not going to enforce this. However, they could have. And you're right. But there's no compensation back to the employee who signed that. So it's a condition of employment on the front end with no way to get anything back on the back end.
Yeah. And like I said, for me, this is the station I always dreamed of working at since I was a little boy. There's nowhere else I want to work in this city. There's nowhere else I'm trying to work at in this city. So it doesn't have the profound impact on me like it might other people in our business, but I do look at other industries. I mean, it's far greater than radio when you're talking 30 million people. It's far greater than television when you're talking 30 million people. And you recognize it will truly be a new frontier if indeed this thing goes into existence, which will allow the employee to have a certain level of control back over their own existence and a certain level of control as it relates to negotiations with their employer that they previously didn't have.
Yeah. And I think employers will have to be a little bit more on the ball as far as enforcing patents and work product.
Well, this was the other thing I saw, because I was trying to think, okay, from the employee side, what's the downside here? Because anytime government gets involved, it's never just one side wins and one side loses. Everybody loses in their own capacity. And somebody made this point. If you work in an industry that you will not be able to be, that the employer will not be able to have control over you, will they be willing to invest in you in terms of continuing education, ramping up your skills? Because if an employer knows, hey, I've got this person for 2 years, I've got this person for 3 years, 4 years, whatever, they're willing to invest in you to make sure you can do that job. And those skills, that education that the employer might pay for, will make you more valuable over time in that company and in future endeavors. And I do think that there's some merit to saying a lot of investment in employees may go by the wayside if employers don't have a certain sense of security about how long that employee might be there.
Right. Which, at least in that case, that is an investment. That is a definable investment. I know Eli Lilly will do that with their employees. They'll be like, all right, we will pay for you to get your master's. However, you need to commit to being with us for at least 5 years. That way Lilly can, you know, has some assurance that they can get their investment back from this person. Oftentimes, it's kind of like a college football or basketball coach, though, where if you leave, the next employer will just pay whatever your out clause is.
Yeah.
And you move on. But yeah, I would say certainly in an industry where, you know, if you're a physicist and you're at the top of your game, it's what's in your head that is valuable. Right. Whereas if you're a factory worker, you can pretty much plug and play anybody into assembling that widget, and your skills are not as definable for an individual.
All right, let's take a break. By the way, before we do that, somebody, apparently in the YouTube chat today, what I wear is the topic of conversation. And yes, I have a ton of these WIBC Radiothon long sleeve shirts that I wear all the time. They are oftentimes different ones that look similar. And there are two reasons I do this, Brad. Number one, it is always 0 degrees in this
I feel
studio.
Like it's hot in here today.
You are handle weather markedly different than I do, Brad. Kev, back me up on this. It always feels like it's about 0 degrees in here.
Yeah, correct? I'm always wearing a jacket
Thank
or a
you.
Long sleeve shirt.
So,
can I guess what number two is?
The point on this, Brad, is I have to, one, have a balancing act between what the weather is like outside in my actual trip in versus what the weather is in here. So clearly, as we have entered spring, I wouldn't want to be wearing a heavy jacket or sweater most of the time outside, but yet I've got to stay warm in here. So the long sleeve Radiothon shirts, which I've collected over the years, is sort of my balancing act on this. Number two, I'm just lazy.
Oh, I thought you were cheap.
Well, I'm also cheap, and the shirts are free. So I guess there's three reasons. They're very easy to put on. I'm always running behind because I have a small child to take care of during the morning. So it checks a whole bunch of boxes. So oftentimes, while they may look similar, they are different. I have like 9 of these shirts, and so I just rotate through them. And it's great marketing for the Salvation Army and the Radiothon, which we do every December.
It is. You are advertising for your employer, Rob.
Thank you.
Kudos to you, employee of the day.
Yes, thank you. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Mitch McConnell said something. I would say it's unbelievable, but it's totally believable by Mitch McConnell standards. It's Kendall and Casey Show.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Every day, it's getting closer.
Yeah, we were going to do that Mitch McConnell clip, but I just can't suck my soul out from my body. Deal with a minute and a half of Mitch McConnell, so we'll play it later in the show. How about
okay,
that?
Okay, thank you, Rob.
It's a Kendall and Casey Show. Rob heads in for Casey today. You know, Kev and I got in a conversation, then you kind of hopped in on this. By the way, have you ever noticed how much better the music gets when Casey's not here? We love you, Casey. But Kev, I think, feels the freedom to play the music, one that he likes, and he knows that I will like.
Does Casey have that much input on the bumper music?
Well, she's very scary, Brad.
Sometimes okay. I'll play like new wave or 80s music for yeah. Casey, but today I'm going to play some 50s
Thank
for you.
You. So we got into a conversation with Richie Valens about, obviously he was a part of the very famous plane crash
right.
that had Buddy Holly, the big bopper, and Richie Valens were all part of that very famous, The Day the Music Died.
Right.
Don McLean wrote the famous song about it. And we were talking about, you know, kind of the hierarchy in terms of notoriety of people that perished in that plane crash. And Kev and I kind of agreed Richie Valens is sort of the sort of forgotten kind of one. Buddy Holly, obviously the most famous.
Right. The Big Bopper was huge at the time.
Yeah. While not the depth of a Buddy Holly, certainly had that one song that was just larger than life, and he was at his peak when that happened. And so Richie Valens is sort of probably the kind of number three forgotten member of that that tragic day.
So we're paying tribute today, well, 60 years later?
What are you doing?
65 years later?
I don't know. Why did you even get on that
I
with me?
I feel like I know more of Richie Valens music than I do of Buddy Holly or the Big Bopper. But there's also that Lou Diamond Phillips movie that I really loved, La Bamba.
Yeah.
And so I'm more familiar with his music from that.
You know, speaking of old people and things that happened on watching old people, Brad and I were just shooting the breeze before the show. And Brad, you totally understood what I was saying when I said this. Do you ever watch videos or movies or concerts or whatever of people that were your age when they were doing the thing? So like I'm 40 years old. And so I'm watching this old Springsteen concert earlier, and I'm watching a thing from when he was 40 years old. And I looked at you and I said, he looks so much more like an adult than I do. Like he looks 40, and I don't feel like I look anywhere near like an adult like he looks. And you're like, I totally know what you're talking about.
I think about as a kid watching Carl Yastrzemski or Nolan Ryan, and I'm like, oh my God, those guys are old. And now I realize I am 10 years older than they were when they retired.
I do this all the time now where I see people who, like you're watching, I was watching Dirty Harry over the weekend at my dad's house, and Clint Eastwood was younger than I am now when he was doing that movie, or about the same age. And it's like, he looks so much more like an adult than I do.
Clint Eastwood, I give credit to, because he was doing those spaghetti westerns until he was almost 50. And it wasn't until he was late 40s to 50 before his career really took off.
But I think it's interesting that you have seen the same thing, because I thought, well, maybe, you know, in some ways I've largely maintained a youthful appearance and childlike innocence and charm. So maybe that's it. But you're saying no, you look on the screen and see these guys and think the same thing.
I even think of it in perspective of my father, who was 23.
Right.
He was 23 when I was born. And I think back to, all right, so he was 41 or 42 when I went to college. And
yeah.
Wow, I thought he was an old man then. And I put my life in perspective, and then I get really disappointed because I'm like, I've accomplished so little in my life to this point.
So I was blown away by that. Then it made me feel so much better, because sometimes I will do things or think things and go, man, I'm a crazy person for thinking these sort of things. And then
you're a crazy person, but not for that reason.
Yeah, we're not thinking that, right? Okay, hey, let's take a break. When we come back, Nikki Kelly from Indiana Capital Chronicle is going to join us. They had a fascinating piece. They talked to all the people running for governor about their views on the death penalty. And we have not had an execution in the state since 2009. It was a fascinating piece. We'll talk about it when we come back. It's Kendall and Casey, 93 WIBC.